Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue in beautiful downtown Milwaukee. It's time for The Upswing on WTMJ, showcasing businesses, entrepreneurs, and community leaders throughout the great state of Wisconsin. Here's your host, Jeff Sherman.
Because I'm going to make this place your home.
Good morning, Wisconsin. Good morning, Milwaukee. Feels like summer out there today. So today's show, we scheduled it pretty well. I'm kind of proud of the full team here at the Upswing and WTMJ. This show is going to fit perfectly into the beautiful summer weather that is outside today. Our guest burst upon the Milwaukee and Wisconsin music market in 2002, taking over operations at Milwaukee's historic Pabst Theater. Today, the Pabst Theater Group has six venues under its umbrella, but it began with CEO Gary Witt and his co-owner, COO Matt Berenger. The team has worked hard to not only develop Greater Milwaukee into a more viable music market for the club and theater tours across the country, but it's created some really cool culture and hospitality along the way. The concert business is crazy beautiful for sure. It's competitive, it's creative, and full of course, not only song and dance, but, you know, some of those pesky fees and service charges that we all kind of roll our eyes at and put up with, but are like, all right, how do we get over this? Yet, at the heart of it all, music builds community like nothing else. And regions and cities that embrace music win. It's always been interesting to me to see the lists of the top tours and just think about the kind of the hows and whys of the concert ticket sales game. I heard this on the podcast, The Town, last week. The top five U.S. tours right now, they're on the road, are just finishing up. U2, obviously U2 at Las Vegas residency. Pink, Madonna, Luis Miguel, and Coldplay. You know, why do certain shows sell? Why don't others? Why do big acts play smaller venues and skip certain cities? And what's the data behind it all for the music fan? Why are we going to pay big bucks to see this act? And how far will we travel to see a concert? What prompts us to go to a show in the first place? We're basically about halfway through 2024. And the top 10 tours in the U.S., I saw this on Billboard.com, are at $1.5 billion in ticket sales. So with the great Milwaukee summer here, we thought it was a good time to talk concerts, music, and how both grow and expand our area. Gary Witt and Matt Berenger join us today from the Pabst Theater Group. Gary, Matt, thanks for taking time out of your day.
Thanks for having us on, Jeff.
So, quick question before we go to the first break. What did you listen to on your way into the office this morning? What's the radio? Other than WTMJ, of course. But, you know, what was playing for you?
My morning listening is dominated by podcasts. Sorry to disappoint you on that.
But, right.
But before I came in here, I was listening to The National, Heaven Faced.
Okay. All right. Matt, what's on your playlist?
We have one of the greatest bands in the whole world playing at the Riverside Theater tonight. So I had to put Being There by Wilco on. I was blasting that this morning, getting excited for the concert.
All right. Very good. I like those creative insights from music leaders. Always need to know new stuff to put on our playlist. So when we come back from the first break, I want to congratulate you and get insights as to the National Independent Venue Association booking its 2025 conference right here in Milwaukee, much due to the support of the Pabst Theater Group. This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. Summer concert preview today with Matt Berenger and Gary Witt from the Pabst Theater Group. First, congratulations on the National Independent Venue Association booking its 2025 convention here in Milwaukee. Gary, you were one of the founding members of NEVA. Tell us about how that came about and what we can expect next summer.
First and foremost, NEVA is the National Independent Venue Association, and it was founded during the pandemic, began in April of 2020. kind of out of the need of our organizations trying to find a way just to survive by how to work together to be able to obtain the government funding that was out there at that point in time. Initially, the PPP loan, but it really started with conversations between just a few groups, mostly in the beginning, Dana Frank from First Avenue and myself, just trying to find a way to develop these relationships and connect. And independent venues across America do great things all the time by themselves. And there never was a time when you could actually put a Dixie cup and connect them together. And once all those things were firing all cylinders and connected together, it was a really powerful tool to use in D.C. along with our lobbying firm, Akin Gump. So when the time came for a request for the next conference, we approached the request in the same way that we do for shows. We just did everything we could possibly do to put Milwaukee in the best light. And when the visits were here, they had great visits at venues across the city. And I think they loved what they saw. They loved the food scene. And they loved that we were trying so hard. So we'll have anywhere between 1,500 and 2,000 concert venue owners, promoters, agents, managers, ticketing companies, other things like that, all in Milwaukee during that time period. And it will be a great opportunity to showcase the city in Milwaukee. It's important that they chose Milwaukee. I think our words we used in the video were that if Neva had a baby, it would most likely look exactly like Milwaukee, because it's a city truly filled with independent venues that, given the fact that Matt and I started this thing back in 2002, it's made the concert business and the live entertainment business has made a tremendous impact in the city of Milwaukee. I think you'll find that developers will tell you that they've made decisions to build apartments or to build hotels based upon the strength of the impact of our industry in the city. And I think that I learned a long time ago from Beth Wierick that we had a bigger value than just being your best friend to get you good seats, that our business is not just the joy business that people see how much fun it is, but in actuality, we're equally as important as a winning sports team to the city of Milwaukee. So I think having Neva here is a tremendous accomplishment for the city of Milwaukee and all the independent venues.
It'd be a great way to showcase not only your venues, but the entire market. You know what also happened in 2002 at the Pabst Theater? The Shermans got engaged at the Pabst Theater during a Keb Mo show. Spotlighting that was your first year. I didn't even realize that.
That was the first,
not a coincidence.
That was the second show that I booked.
Keb Mo.
Keb Mo. Yeah. I still have the old school ticket. I think it was orchestra seats, maybe $15 or something like that. Yeah, it's, you know, some things have changed in the ticket world, but
the first show
was
Cassandra Wilson.
Okay,
that was the first show.
All right, so I want to talk a little bit about the state of the ticket. Obviously, we're kind of all living in a Ticketmaster world, and we're not going to speculate on this show about the breakup of Live Nation and Ticketmaster. I think that's an entire different show for another day. But from your independent venue lens, How are you working every day to kind of ensure fair and transparent ticketing processes and kind of addressing the fees and scalping and just everything that people don't like about the ticketing world?
Well, I think that it's very difficult for us because we can put tickets up for sale for a show. And I always use the example of The Smile, Tom York. Tom and Johnny from Radiohead put together a band. They toured under the name The Smile. They've now have two records out. They were insistent upon their tickets being priced at $75 and no higher. But the day that our tickets went up for sale, we used a ticketing company called Access. Our tickets were also on sale on Ticketmaster on their secondary site for hundreds of dollars. So fans across the country, because Ticketmaster is the Tampax of ticketing, basically, they're the generic brand of ticketing. Everyone goes to Ticketmaster to look for things like that. And it does make it difficult because the secondary market is a shell game or a head fake that is encouraging people to spend much more for tickets than they would ever spend on the primary market tickets.
Yeah. So does the positioning around all-in pricing where you're seeing the first screen and it's saying upfront fees, not including tax, is that the future in terms of creating transparency?
I think there's something that's critically important to understand about that is that back in the, really going back to the early 80s is when the ticketing model sort of changed, and it moved from something that I think felt very simple. You have you know, you're going to go buy your tickets and
paper tickets.
Yeah. Paper tickets. Right. And, you know, the ticket you're holding is the only one that's out there to, you know, all of these kind of different locations. And that's sort of the introduction of service fees. Ultimately, you know, the dominant player in the field became Ticketmaster. But in addition to that, there's really hundreds of other ticketing companies. I think what's, you know, when you talk about all in ticketing, if we say, okay, I think that for the consumer is a great thing.
Right.
But I think it's also really critically important to understand that, that industry has changed so significantly that every small independent business has modeled their business saying, how do we work within the system that sort of Ticketmaster set up? How did this start? And so having everybody do the U-turn, and this is something we're not necessarily even a part of. We're not a ticketing company or anything like that.
Right.
But it's a more challenging proposition, I think, than it seems on its face.
Yeah. Okay. When we come back from the break, I want to talk about the evolutionary stepladder, if you will, of the Pabst Theater Group and get your assessments of the current state of Milwaukee music and especially the growing comedy scene. This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. Matt Berenger and Gary Witt from the Pabst Theater Group join us today. Talk a little bit about kind of the evolutionary stepladder, if you will, of the Pabst Theater Group in terms of the venues now under your umbrella and how the business has grown through the years.
Well, you know, we started, this whole thing started with a national historic landmark, the Pabst Theater, going out of business or at least losing money for the city. And we took that over the Riverside. You know, that's 1350. The Riverside's was closed when we took it over at that's 2,400 or 2,500 tickets. And then Turner Hall is 1,000. And that was closed for decades, you know, when we took that over. So we apparently we're either like, we're like the Narcan of concert promoters or something like that. But importantly, as you've mentioned, and I think as Matt has coined it, we have this evolutionary stepladder for artists to grow in our venues. And I think that having now a Vivarium in place at 450, up to Turner at 1,000, and the Pabst at 14 or 1350, Riverside at 2,500, and now High Life at 4,000, we have the perfect opportunity for artists to be able to start in Milwaukee, especially if they start at a place like Cactus Club or maybe Shank Hall, and then grow up through our venues and to be able to have more artists actually visit the city. And I think to that point, one of the real reasons for that success is the growth in our business of comedy, because Milwaukee per capita and also based upon the size of our venues, we're doing more comedy than bigger cities like Chicago do because they don't really adequately use their venues to grow that. And I think that a lot of that credit is on the shoulders of one Matt Berenger, who really has spearheaded like making comedy a priority, because we only have we have 1.5 million people in our metro. That's just not enough to serve the 800 shows that we're going to be doing annually and everyone else does.
And is that a regional and national trend too? Is that stemming from Netflix and the comedy series that people are seeing, and then it kind of comes down to the local level because the acts want more places to play?
Well, there's certainly been an explosion in how people access comedy.
Yeah.
You know, it used to be you'd look for the HBO special or the Comedy Central special. And prior to that, it was even like a Johnny Carson appearance. Now we're at the comics, in many cases, the performers driving their own bus with podcasts where they have a daily personal relationship with their audience. You know, as you mentioned, multiple streaming platforms that have massive audiences. So there's kind of a democratization there in the ability to reach the audience that really has never existed. And so touring comedy especially has never been bigger.
Yeah. What about the kind of the movie talkback events? Is that something you've been creating and curating on on your level, or again, is that a national and regional
thing? We were definitely early adopters on that model in terms of trying to think of a different way.
What was the first one
to
we did
present
it?
First one we did was Bruce Campbell with Evil Dead 2.
Okay.
And since then, we've hosted everybody from, you know, Mel Brooks to Christopher Lloyd and everybody in between. But
Chevy Chase.
And we have some exciting ones on the way. But I think it's just another way for people to view live entertainment on the stage. And it's the same thing when you think about like a live podcast. 15 years ago, podcasts as a live entity were just not a thing. People couldn't wrap their brains around what is it I'm going to see. And now that is very much in the lexicon of the entertainment
fan. Ability to build engagement and create connection through stars is important. Do you work directly through the celebrities for those events, or is it the studios, or is it a combination? Just give us a little of a backstory and how
the
those events come together.
The studios aren't really necessarily involved. They're, of course, paid for showing the movie. But it's really just like any other event that we do. They get booked through an agency as we do, and those shows happen and come through our venues. Look, I think a lot of this starts with the fact that Matt and I, when we started the business, we didn't build the business based upon selling tickets. We built it based on developing community, and developing community eventually long-term sells tickets. But the reality is that in order to do that, we have to serve a really wide audience because, again, that we don't have the population of Chicago, et cetera. So developing community was key to us to survive in the business.
Welcome back to The Upswing. Gary Witt, Matt Berenger from the Pabst Theater Group join us today. I got a bunch of quick fire questions we're going to do in the last couple blocks, but I want to open up the WTMJ talk and text line 855-616-1620 and weigh in, and we'll take some of your questions at the next segment.
Yes, so ask us hard questions.
The hard questions.
We
Let's
like
bring
the difficult
concert
ones.
Questions, ticketing questions, all of the above.
Beverage questions.
Ooh, beverage
Bathroom
questions are
questions.
Good.
We like bathrooms.
Oh, yes, yes. Why don't you have more? Come on, the lines are too long.
You're totally wrong. We know this because we spent $850,000 during the pandemic when we didn't have the money to build 22 women's stalls downstairs and 17 urinals. So if you've got to go, my friend, that's the place for you to go anytime during the week.
All right. Very good. So what role do you see technology continuing to play in the live music experience? Phones from a venue standpoint. Is there a rub there from the phone standpoint?
A rub in relation to people being on their phones all the time?
Yeah. I mean, does that...
Does
that impact the way that you see the show, or is it just like, hey, this is okay?
I mean, one of the refreshing things you actually see is when you have an artist elect to use this service called Yonder that we, from time to time, it's actually, I would consider it kind of a low technology solution because it's actually more like your department store security tag, the on and off, and you get your phone put in a secure bag that you carry with you. And then if it rings, you have it on vibrate, and you just step out to the lobby and take a call there. But people are so tempted to reach into their phone and just look and whatever, and it's a real refreshing concert experience that is phone-free. Artists love it, and I think patrons at the end of the day love it, too.
Yeah. Look, I think it's also, for better or worse, it's a national addiction for people to look at their phones.
Right.
And I can cite an instance a couple of years ago where I sat in the crowd, which we don't get to do as often, behind a gentleman at a show that was a jazz vocalist piano player at the Riverside. And I sat behind this guy, and he checked his phone at least every 90 seconds in a very dark theater, lighting up the entire theater with his phone. Right. And he just constantly was playing with photos. And it can become incredibly annoying to people. But, you know, I think we adapt to those things in a way, like, as Matt mentioned, the industry kind of adapting that is really smart. I also think people do kind of get over that urge after a period of time, and they realize they've just taken 12 videos that they'll never watch again.
Exactly right.
Life.
Like, let's just be here. Let's be present.
Be present.
Appreciate the music and remember it. Maybe take one picture, one small video, but that's done.
Or go enjoy our bathrooms.
Yes, that's right. Or get some food and beverage. What's new in terms of partnerships and initiatives in terms of the food and beverage space? I like the popcorn edition a whole lot. You know, I'm a popcorn fan, and yeah, it's a great addition to the.
It is like being a dog, though. It's like my dog Maisie. As soon as I even go near the cookie jar, she starts to slobber. I can kind of see people do that when they smell the popcorn coming into the building in the same way. So, yeah, like I think we've you know, we announced recently a new partnership with our friends at Miller that continues our partnership there. We're really respectful of working with local groups like that. Look, Miller employs 1,500 people in the city of Milwaukee. We have tremendous respect for that because those jobs are very important for the city. I don't want to shock people, but robots don't pee in beer cans. It's your neighbor that's actually making that beer, and it's really important to be able to recognize the fact that these are family-supporting jobs. We also have a great relationship with our friends at Associated Bank. Again, a Wisconsin company. We have tremendous respect for them. I think they have a lot of the same goals that we have of trying to make the surrounding community better.
Okay. When we come back, bunch of quick fire questions. I want to talk about the importance of reviews for future ticket sales, and what's a radius clause and how does that impact the amount of shows that we see in the Milwaukee market.
Do you want to go there?
I want to go there. Gary Witt, Matt Berenger from the Pabst Theater Group, join us on the Upswing. You're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. Gary Witt, Matt Berenger from the Pabst Theater Group join us today. Gary, Matt, what is a radius clause in terms of a show, and how do they impact what we get to see in the Milwaukee market?
How do they? Well, a radius clause is a condition that is set up within the negotiation process of an artist contract. The most well-known radius clauses would be surrounding a festival, where typically the artist is making a much higher guarantee than they would in a typical routed date. And so the festival is saying, hey, we need a radius clause of, in some cases, hundreds of miles to, you know, over a period of time that artist would not play, so that the festival draws based on that. But
so thinking that having another show 3 months down the road 90 miles away would impact ticket sales of that show.
Correct. So, you know, Lollapalooza, for right. instance, has a massive investment in what they're doing. You know, their goal is if I have an artist there, they want to keep it somewhat exclusive.
Okay. All right. Well, speaking of Lollapalooza, Gary, I wanted to... I love your interaction and engagement on X and Twitter. You always have thought-provoking comments that I like to engage and share. So a couple days ago, I think it was the end of May, Lollapalooza came out with an announcement that it is doing after shows. Dozens of artists performing at local venues across Chicago. Do you think that model, it's happening on kind of a smaller level for Summerfest, but would that model work for Summerfest, and how would you encourage that?
I don't think it really matters whether it works for Summerfest or not. Summerfest, you know, this all started when Lollapalooza got sued by the city of Chicago because they were basically absorbing up all of the concerts in the city, not only during the time of the festival, but also in the 3 months prior and the 3 months after with their radius clause. So, you know, in theory, Summerfest exists. One of the reasons to be able to grow and develop business in the city of Milwaukee. So the fact that Summerfest closes as late as it does pretty much causes all the business that takes place in Milwaukee other than hotels to take place at Summerfest. So Summerfest, I believe, should act more like Lollapalooza other than the main stage at the amphitheater. The rest of Summerfest should close at 10 o'clock and they should host events downtown in Milwaukee. And we're not thinking about this for our venues only. Right. It should be at restaurants and bars and coffee shops where artists can appear. And it becomes a real experience for people who travel to the city of Milwaukee to then experience the rest of downtown. Because if you think of Summerfest as like a giant game board, basically the entire city tilts down towards Summerfest during that period. Restaurants close completely during those windows of time when Summerfest is here.
Yeah.
So I think if it was to follow the Lollapalooza model, they should, yes, close at 10, and there should be after shows there because they're not just serving themselves or the $3.3 million salary they paid Don Smiley. Mm-hmm. They're actually serving the city of Milwaukee.
Right. Yeah, and it will, you know, as they look at expansion on the grounds and further programming, you know, there's definitely opportunity there for sure. In terms of driving ticket sales and getting people to shows, whether it's Summerfest or the Pabst Theater or Turner Hall, how important are reviews in getting people to act to buy tickets?
Well, I think the what's important is the conversation surrounding performances overall. And with the advent of the internet and the growth of social media, it's been a positive and a negative. There have been studies that show that 48% of people get their news from social media, which is really incredibly frightening, I might add. But the reality is also is that you don't only rely on local media any longer, which is a positive thing because there almost is very little existence of local media since large corporations bought most of the media that existed in smaller markets, as our newspaper has been bought and sold a number of times and now is owned by a very large conglomerate. That's one of the reasons why we've paid attention to growing our own community and developing our community. We have 500,000 people in our database and send out 62 million emails a year. You probably get all of them, Jeff.
I do, but, yes.
But all 62 million. But the reality is that it is really important. But I think there's a statistic that's interesting. The PR industry is a $150 billion business in America right now. But the odd thing about that is over the years with the large corporations buying most of the media outlets, there's a 100-to-1 ratio for PR people to journalists, which means that there just aren't enough people that are out there to write stories because, you know, look at the Journal. The Journal has one writer that writes about music. If it wasn't for the Milwaukee Record and the Shepherd Express, I think we would really be lost in not having enough reviews of the important shows are not just the arena shows. It's also, you know, I mean, the things that happen at the Cactus Club deserve to be reviewed. Yeah.
All right, we'll come back from the break. Some of the funniest and craziest things have happened at shows through the years at the Pabst Theater. I want to know how the Bill Maher show is selling. There's a big show tomorrow night, Pete Davidson, and maybe we'll talk about country shows because that's a passion topic of mine. This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. Appreciate Gary Witt and Matt Berenger from the Pabst Theater Group joining us today. In terms of country, I want to know, I'm a fan, and we were talking in between the break, and I think it's a genre that if you're a fan of one artist, you're a fan of all of them, and the big country thunders and the big touring shows. How does Milwaukee get more country shows, and why are they going to one place over another?
Well, first and foremost, I think you have to congratulate Leslie and Joe at the Rave because they host a significant number of great country shows, especially younger artists and those that are kind of up and comers. But like all genres that we host in our venues, there actually are a lot of things that we country shows that we host that are under the radar of some of the bigger shows that are there. You know, Matt, who do we have coming up countrywide?
Well, you know, I mean, some of the what I would say more exciting sort of emerging artists would be people like Mae Simpson, Caitlin Butts, White Buffalo. But we're also hosting some, you know, tried and true. We were just talking about the Dina Carter show at Vivarium coming up this month.
And to be able to see an artist like that up close and personal with 200, 300, 400 people is significant.
And look, historically, one of the guys that we gave original Pabst Theater chairs to before he passed away was Merle Haggard, that we hosted at the Pabst, and the same thing for Don Williams at the Riverside and Willie Nelson, the number of times at the Riverside. I could tell you some amazing weed stories about Willie at the Riverside when the microphone goes on.
In terms of how does Milwaukee attract more country shows, I think it's just like anything. It's fan participation. If there's, if the city can demonstrate that there's a desire and a demand for country here, that's just like what we talked about with comedy. I mean, Milwaukee has demonstrated a real interest in comedy, and because performers know that the shows will sell well here, so that's about fan support at some level.
And are the big legacy names like Pete Davidson tomorrow and Bill Maher next month, are those shows selling well?
Well, I think it's the Bill Maher is an interesting story because it's taking place around the RNC.
Yeah,
I think there's a lot of activity around the RNC that isn't good. at this point in time, I think you'll, if you did a poll around the city, I think you'd find that of the many promises that were made for the week of the RNC, that most of those are unfulfilled at this point in time. I think after going to New Orleans and talking to my friends in Chicago who are hosting the DNC, and I find out that the guys at 16 on Center who hosts the Salt Shed and Talia Hall, et cetera, they're booked every single day. We're honestly not booked any days at all for the RNC at any of our venues other than Turner Hall, which is right across. But we've done a survey of the rest of the city, and the rest of the city is suffering at the same time. There really aren't that many things booked. Even the Third Street Market Hall right next to us isn't that booked up, which is actually kind of crazy. Yeah. So I don't think that the RNC has been the revenue driver for the city that was promised. It's unfortunate, but they seem to have a lot of issues and problems within, and it traditionally is smaller somewhat than the DNC as well.
All right. Well, your take, we've got about 30 seconds. If we can give this in 30 seconds. How does Milwaukee continue to scale up and get to the mayor's vision of 1 million population? Music's a part of it for sure.
I think music has played a role in the last 20 years in growing the city from a city that didn't necessarily have an identity to one that has a tremendous soul and identity. Currently, it's attracting a lot of young people to come downtown. It's a bit like Richard Florida's dream, you know, what the city has become because of that. But unfortunately, that dream has limitations. The reality is that we have to address the 48,000 jobs that we lost during the 80s when jobs were moved, manufacturing jobs were moved outside of America, and we were left with poverty, joblessness, poverty, and now we're facing violence and crime. We really have to employ people, which includes the ability to be able to possibly upgrade our transportation system to a regional transportation system so the people who live downtown who used to be gainfully employed can get to Oak Creek or Germantown or, other places that actually have large manufacturing and other opportunities. I'm sure that Jim at Capco would love to be able to have access to the people in downtown Milwaukee to come work in his place.
A regional approach to growth, and part of that for sure are the venues and the music around us each and every day. Matt Berenger, Gary Witt, appreciate your time this morning. Have a great Milwaukee summer. We'll see you next time.